Academic Aesthetic for November 13th, 2013. It's a Wednesday, and I'm back, sort of. I've been thinking about doing this for a while. I've wanted to reboot the Academic Aesthetic podcast. It's been far too long since I was podcasting regularly. So what I'm going to be doing in this reboot is finding interesting things online and talking about up to maybe four of them per show. And this might end up being a daily show, it might end up being three times weekly, it might end up being weekly. I haven't decided on the format yet, but I came to the conclusion that if I just kept thinking about what I was going to do instead of going out and doing it, then it would frankly never get done. So even though I've got all these other things to worry about, let's get started. All right, first off. One of the things that I do is check Tumblr a lot. There's a lot of good teachers that are on Tumblr posting various things into the education and teaching hashtags. And I've seen more than one person posting about homework and whether or not it's a good idea and whether or not students are doing it and whether or not you should punish students severely for not doing their homework, etc. Well, here's my opinion on it. I hate homework. I hate giving it, I hate grading it, I hate doing it. Homework has come to represent busy work to be ignored in the minds of many of our students. Those who do homework are frequently unable to do all the fun activities that we expect kids to be able to do because they're spending all night long doing homework. Not just a few little simple things either. In the name of rigor, and we can argue about what the definition of rigor is if we really want to, but that's another show entirely. But in the name of rigor, there are a bunch of teachers out there that are giving 1 to 2 hours of homework per night. Now, that would be fine if you only had one teacher, but most students have more than one. So they come home and they're given this huge amount of work to do. Some of them have parents that sit down to help them, and they come back to the parent-teacher conferences saying, "Oh my gosh, we're spending all night long doing this homework." And there's others who just refuse to do it because they realize they're so overwhelmed. It's like defaulting on a loan. You know that it's too much work to be worthwhile. Which is a shame, because while I refuse to believe that more work equals better work, there's a lot of people out there who seem to think otherwise. What do I do? Well, I'm an art teacher by trade. I teach in a computer lab now, but I've never stopped being an art teacher. I assign projects. This is what I've been trained to do. I've been doing project-based learning since before it became cool, if I want to put my hipster glasses on. These projects are frequently done in the classroom, but many students choose to complete the work at home, and that's fine. I don't care about the location. We're supposed to be preparing our kids for a global economy. Location doesn't matter anymore. If they want to work closer to me so I'm there as a resource, awesome. If they want to do it at home where they're more comfortable or where their parents can help them, equally awesome. They can pick that location. It's fine. It works. So my students are actually the ones choosing whether or not they have homework because they're either working on the project in class or at home. Once you give students a choice, they become empowered. Whatever choice they pick, it's their choice, so it's more meaningful to them than if you just said, "This is when you need to do this activity." Works out a lot better in the end. I actually wish I had the time to do that more with my elementary kids, but for my middle school students, since I teach at a K-8 academy, that's how I handle things, and it works out great for the most part. Now, next thing that I'd like to talk about, I have a friend named Sarah, and she makes t-shirts for a living for a company called We Love Fine. And this is not really an ad. They're not paying me to say this. I'm just pointing this out because I like video games and some of her shirts have to do with video games. She has this great shirt that she posted to her Tumblr, so I put it up on my own Tumblr as well, which has a bunch of the various stick figure art that you would see in like Portal. Underneath it says, "There's a test for that." A whole take on, "There's an app for that." I think it's a funny mix between the "There's an app for that" catchphrase that was used for a while and the whole Portal video game, which I think is incredibly fun because I've played Portal 1 and Portal 2. I imagine many people have, even perhaps you have played with this. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in games as well. So Yeah, I thought that was cool. Even if you don't go out and buy the shirt, I thought it was a cool picture to see. So that's up on my Tumblr as well. Next up, let's get angry again. So there was a New York Republican mayoral candidate named Joe, I want to say his name was Lota. My apologies to him for if I'm mispronouncing his name. He's not actually the main subject of this article that I found. Actually, it was his advertising people who came up with some of his political campaign ads. They came up with one about how, oh, look at all this bad stuff that New York went through, and if we don't elect this person as mayor, then we're going to go back to that day and age when everything was bad. I'm not going to argue politics here. The fact that he's a Republican has nothing to do with what occurred here. I imagine that what occurred here could easily have happened if he was a Democratic candidate or an independent candidate or whatever. The politics is irrelevant for this. What is relevant is the advertising team that made this ad went onto Flickr.com, grabbed a bunch of photos, and threw them in to the ad. I imagine that they used the Ken Burns effect because everyone uses the Ken Burns effect when they're using photos, but they just threw the pictures in there thinking, oh, we found them on the internet, we're allowed to use them. Except they weren't. Even if they were Creative Commons licensed, not every Creative Commons license is identical, and they all require attribution. And they used them like they were free to use public domain images, which don't require attribution. Now, after the fact, when they realized their flub, they did try to go back and get retroactive approval. But, frankly, if I was in the same situation, with all the stuff that I put out there that's under a Creative Commons license, this show is under a Creative Commons license, if I found out after the fact that somebody was using it for a purpose that was not included in the license, like, say, using it without attribution, and then they asked retroactively, oh, may I? I might just tell them no out of spite, because I'd be really angry about it. So I don't fault any of the photographers who got really upset that their images were being used in a political campaign without attribution. It's a shame that there were people who apparently were in the business of advertising, otherwise how would they get hired to work for a mayoral candidate, who didn't understand copyright enough to know that. To ask for permission first. This is not the first time this has happened. This is not going to be the last time this has happened. This is not just happening when it comes to politics. It just so happens that this was the team for a politician. But it happens with other people too. It happens with major businesses all the time. The solution for this, again, is education. Are you showing best practices when it comes to using copyright in your classroom? As teachers, we can get away with a lot of stuff because of fair use. If it's for an educational purpose, our rights extend a little bit more than the average person who just wants to find a song and put it on their YouTube video. We do have a little more freedom in that regard. But we also will often take it too far. If you've ever shown a movie in its entirety off of Netflix to your classroom, or rented a movie from Blockbuster for those of us who are old enough to remember it, and shown it to your kids in its entirety in your classroom, guess what? You're still violating copyright law because we're not supposed to be showing the whole movie. Personally, I think it's a bad idea anyway. The movie should not be the educational system. Don't replace yourself with a movie. If you really have to, show a few excerpts of it and then have classroom discussion on that. If they want to see the rest of it, let them see the rest of it on their own. They can get it from the same place you got it from. We have to think before we do. There's a lot of teachers who just do. I found this on the internet, I'm going to use it in my classroom. Oh, I found this picture, I'm going to put it in this handout. Oh, I'm going to make a Xerox copy of all the chapters in this book because I only have one of them. Don't do that. Matter of fact, what I recommend you do is not abide by the letter of the fair use clause that allows us a lot more freedom than other people. Abide by the rules that everyone else has to follow. Don't be that teacher that chews gum while telling other students to spit it out, or no eating or drinking in the computer lab while you sip your coffee walking amongst the computers. Don't be a hypocrite. Just because we're allowed to do something that other people aren't allowed to do doesn't mean that we should be doing it that way. Teach best practices. I cannot say that enough, and it bugs me anytime I see a colleague in or out of my current building ignoring copyright law just because it was easier for them to ignore copyright law. And it's a shame that there are people who try that. Alright, so last thing I'm going to be talking about today. There is this thing called Little Bits, which is an electronics kit that, now, if you're old like me, you might remember electronic kits from back in the day where it was this big box, and you took the lid off, and there was another cardboard box inside that you weren't supposed to pick up, but it had all these little electronic devices sticking out of the box with the wires going back inside and then connecting to springs. And you would connect the various electronic pieces with these pieces of wire that you would bend the spring so it would spread open a little bit, and you stick the wire inside, and then you let it go back in, and would pinch the wire in place so there was no soldering, there was no screwing. You would just put everything in, and you could build a crystal radio or a transmitter or a receiver, or you could make a light glow or make a weird, annoying electronic noise, and all the things that were really cool about kits like that. I had one or two of them growing up. I loved playing with them, even if I didn't understand half the stuff, because I was too lazy to read the manual, but at the same time, it was fun to find stuff out. It was so cool to do that, and it ran off of a 9-volt battery. Well, this is the next generation of that. Basically, these are all little bits that, they're not all connected in one cardboard box. They connect via magnets, and you just put the pieces of magnet together to create whatever you want out of electronics. Well, there's a synth kit for Little Bits now, which is all about making synthetic sound, in this case, going more towards music, one would hope, but I'm sure it can make any type of sound. Your definition of music may vary. Definition, if I said that correctly. I don't even remember anymore. Alright, so I want these. I don't have the money to get these. I wish I had these to play with my students. I posted this to Twitter last night, and there were several people who got really interested in it, and we might even be doing some type of maker camp sometime in the future, because there's a lot of us in my particular county who are getting kind of interested in the maker DIY movement, which is an incredibly fun thing to be in, even if I haven't been making a lot of stuff that isn't made out of bits and bytes recently. It's something I need to get back into. I'm getting away from my roots, I think, and that needs to change. So, those are the stories that I wish to talk about today. You've been listening to The Academic Aesthetic. This is under a Creative Commons Attribution license. Go ahead and share it all you want, but please make sure you give credit where credit is due and link back to me. This podcast is hosted at academicaesthetic.com, where I often tell people, if you can spell it, you deserve to see it, but if you can't spell academic aesthetic, or you're having a bad typing day, which happens to all of us, go to aaronbsmith.com and there'll be a link to it there, as well as a link to my Tumblr page, my Twitter page, and everything else you can imagine. And please, leave a comment, let me know what you think of this. This is my first episode of the reboot, so it's either going to be really good or really bad. Think of it as a new pilot, perhaps. So please, comments and criticisms are welcome, and they will help me grow as a podcaster, because I've gotten out of the habit of doing this, and I need to get back into it. So, you've been listening to The Academic Aesthetic. This is Aaron Smith, the Art Guy, and thanks for listening.